So, questions?
You know, it seems to me I'm going to have to live 50 more years to learn all the scriptures.
Okay, so you're going to have to live 50 more years to learn all the scriptures. Actually, maybe 100? No, there's so much to learn.
So is it possible then, since people have analyzed the scriptures and the Buddha and his teachings mm-hmm. for 2600 years, and I hate to use this word, but can I just accept them on their the faith that they've done a good job?
So if certain people have analyzed the Buddha's teachings for 2600 years, can you accept it? You know, assume that they've done a good job and accept it. I think you can, you know, at least provisionally. You still have to use your own intelligence. But I think when you look at the history of Buddhism, you see that it's been analyzed, you know, very critically analyzed by great sages for many, many years. Okay? And in addition, people have meditated on the teachings and actualized the realizations that are spoken of in the teachings. So there's actual people who have attained the realizations that are spoken of. So it's a living tradition. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not just a lot of theory that you can't point to anybody who's attained the result. It's not like that. Okay? Now, what's interesting is even among the very wise ancient scholars, you will find differences of opinion. And so when you study, you know, part of the thing is, you know, well, this one said this and this one said that. Yeah. And so then the process of rethinking about it, okay, which one do I believe? Yeah, well, this one's been right before, so I might provisionally accept his, but then I still have to come up with some good reasons for refuting this one. Okay? And the process of thinking about the teachings in that way actually spurs our intelligence and our wisdom. Okay? So especially when we're studying emptiness, there's a lot of reasoning that goes on. You know? Everybody says, okay, the Prasangika is the best view. And we all go, oh yes, I believe in the Prasangika. But, you know, we have to really study it to be able to see if we actually do. One of my teachers, when we were studying that, he said, you know, if some non-Buddhist came along and told you why there was, you know, everything was a manifestation of some primal matter and universal material, he said, you're so stupid, you'd probably believe him. You know, he didn't mean that as an insult. He wasn't insulting us. But what he was pointing out is that our capacities to reason were not really very well developed yet. So we couldn't think of ways to refute somebody's argument. Okay. So it's the same way just in the modern world. We may meet somebody and they say God created the world. And, you know, they may say to us, well, how do you explain the beginning? If you don't believe in God, how do you explain the beginning? Yeah. And we say, well, we don't believe there's a beginning. And they say, but there has to be a beginning. And the only way, you know, if there's a beginning, there's got to be a creator. Because before the beginning, there was nothing. So there has to be an all-powerful creator who created it. If there's a beginning, then that means nothing existed before the beginning. Okay? So that means there was no creator before the beginning. Okay? Or, you know, if you leave the creator out of it, if you say there was a beginning and out of nothing something arose, well, that's completely contradictory, because if nothing existed, then there's no cause for the formation of something. Yeah, if there's nothing, there's no causal anything to create anything. Okay. And then if there is a creator, then you get into the whole thing of, you know, because people say the creator is absolute, the creator is permanent. But creation involves change. So how can you have creation without having change and without the creator changing? And who created the creator? You know, because if the creator is an impermanent phenomenon that's changeable, he must have arisen for causes. So where did the creator come from? Okay? So, you know, if your power of reasoning is developed, then there's so many ways to refute that. No, we can refute that kind of argument. And we should be able to. You know, we should think about this. You shouldn't just say, okay, well, she said there's no creator because blah, blah, blah. You need to think about it, you know, so that you understand it yourself.
I have a question. When you're dealing with like, the creator and that issue, or controversy, I don't know what to call it, with Hinduism, I'm really in a religion class right now, I've always been interested in both Hinduism and Buddhism, and my teacher seems convinced that the idea of Brahman, or the just that not that there's a creator and a creation, but just that everything is a part of this force or being or whatever you want to call it, and that they in Hinduism, when they're self-realizing, that they're just finding that part of ourselves that just is everything, and it says that. That's kind of like nirvana. And I was like, I don't know. You know, it's when you attain enlightenment that you're just becoming aware of reality and that everything is connected and we're, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't seem, I couldn't really get the connection between the Hindus. And I know the Buddha kind of had to have used the ideas of Hindus, because that's where everybody was when he was teaching, right, to help people understand what he was teaching. So how much of that do you think connects to the Buddhist idea, from the Hindu idea of...
Okay, so your question is, you know, in Hinduism, and there's many different kinds of Hinduism, but in the kind that talks about Brahma, instead of seeing Brahma as a creator, seeing Brahma as a force, as a positive force, and then saying that realization is discovering that part of you that is Brahma. And how does that compare to the Buddhist idea of emptiness or nirvana? Yes. And when you gain realizations in Buddhism, saying that things are empty. Now, I am not an expert in Hinduism. I have to preface my comment saying that. But a few things. First of all, Hinduism is not a monolithic religion. There's many, many different kinds of Hinduism. Some Hinduism is very theistic, and some is non-theistic. So you have to really see the difference between the theist and the non-theist. Okay? If there's some philosophy that's saying reality is a whole, as a whole, is a positive phenomenon, okay? Like there's some cosmic energy that's a positive force, a positive phenomena, and we are all kind of parts of this one positive phenomena, that's a very different philosophy from Buddhism. Okay? Because in Buddhism, when we talk about the ultimate nature, it's what's called, it's a negative phenomena. A negative not meaning bad. A negative that here doesn't mean nihilistic. What it means is that in Buddhism, reality is the absence of inherent existence. Okay? In other words, the way we perceive things, we are projecting on reality stuff that is not there. And what reality is it's the absence of all the fanciful things that we've projected. Seeing things as an absence in that way, that's seeing them as non-dual, that's very different than seeing them as all one. Okay? Because if you have one positive thing, then it gets a little bit more complicated there. Yeah? It's like, you know, there may be similarities between different philosophies and religions, But we need to examine more closely, are they really the same? Yeah. It would be, and you know what might happen is because in the West, we look at anything from Asia and it's all the same. Okay? Yeah. Because we're very limited in our awareness of things. We're very narrow-minded. So somebody in Asia might look at America and say, well, you know, Catholics and Protestants and Jews and Muslims, their religion is all the same because they all believe in God. Yeah? You know? I mean, if you live in Asia and you know all the intricacies of Asian philosophies and religions, and you don't know much about the West, oh, well, they all believe in God. They're all kind of the same. Are they? Mm-hmm. Oh. Okay.
I have another question. With different types of Buddhism, is it that's like, you know, like Chinese Buddhism or you know, Theravada or versus Mahayana? Or, like, how is it, how do you, I mean, I'm guessing that it's best just to focus on one type, like, you know, Tibetan Buddhism that's, you know, mm-hmm. just the focus. Or as opposed to trying to go all over and compare, and like, how do you sort through that? So, this is the way.
Okay. Okay. So there's many different kinds of Buddhism. So how do you know which one you should follow and what one's best for you? That is a very individual matter, and it depends, I think, a lot on people's karma in the past. My own particular case, okay. When I came in, I didn't know the difference between, I was, you know, Hinduism and Buddhism. It was like they were all from Asia, okay. I didn't know within Buddhism the different, what the different branches were, you know. I didn't know any of that, you know. I just happened to see a flyer in a bookstore about this meditation course. I went. What these people said when I thought about it made sense. When I practiced it, it helped me. I kept going back. I didn't know for years. I didn't even hear about the Dalai Lama or know who he was. All I knew is that this made sense to me and it helped me when I practiced. Okay? And so I just kept going back to the same teachers. And then I kind of figured out, you know, and I went to India to study more. And it's like, my teacher sent me to other people, you know, to study with as well. And there were other, you know, Buddhist teachers. And lo and behold, they said similar things. And I was going, oh my goodness, the way I grew up in religion, everybody was always contradicting each other. I'm like, oh, they're all saying similar things. This is really interesting, you know. And so I just kept going back. Yeah, and then established a very firm basis in Tibetan Buddhism under the guidance of those teachers. And then after that, it was only years later that I came to live in Singapore, and that's when I came to learn more about other forms of Buddhism and really respect them. Yeah, although my main practice, I've always stayed with it, you know, with the Tibetan practice because it's and the Tibetan philosophy, you know, or I should say the philosophy of the Nalanda tradition, because that's the one that makes the most sense to me. Now, some people, you know, have very different karma, and, you know, your first teaching, you may stumble into, you know, who knows who is teaching who knows what. Yeah. And that teacher may or may not be completely reliable, or they, you know, may not be, you know, very well qualified, or they may be very well qualified, or it may make sense to you, or it may not make sense to you. So I think it's always good to check, okay? If there's a certain system of teachings that makes sense to you and you find it very helpful, then I think stick with that, you know? It's like, you know, you don't, when you go to a buffet, you don't need to taste every single dish. Yeah? Well, maybe you do. But you don't look like you've tasted all the dishes. Yeah? So, some things, you know, you just, if you know what you like, then you just, you eat what you like. You don't need to taste everything. Yeah. But then I think if a system of practice doesn't feel totally comfortable to you, then you may want to learn from other traditions. I think in choosing teachers, it's always best to go slowly and really check somebody's credentials, and not just their written credentials, but you observe them as a person. Do they keep good ethical conduct? Do they have a good relationship with their own teacher? How do they treat other people? Do they know the scriptures well? Do they have some experience from having practiced? You know? You really check them out. What kind of motivation are they teaching with? Are they just trying to have a big gathering around them? Do they really care about their students? Okay? So in choosing teachers, you really have to spend some time and do some investigation. Yeah? But at the beginning, you can certainly go to somebody's teachings and learn from them. Yeah? And then try things out, see how it goes. No, I mean, when I went, like I said, I knew absolutely nothing. I just happened to be very fortunate, and I had excellent teachers from the very get-go. Yeah? But the thing was, even though I had excellent teachers, I didn't necessarily know that. And it was through attending teachings through them regularly and, you know, with them regularly, seeing how they lived their life. Seeing how they interacted with other people, what they taught, you know, checking with other people and hearing about them, that then my confidence and faith in them really increased.
Yeah. That makes sense. I felt that when you're saying that, describing that, it's like when I was starting out, I thought Buddhism was Buddhism, you know.
Yeah.
And it just makes sense because every different culture.
Okay, let's just sit quietly for a minute, and then we'll meditate.